Most of you know that when I was 7 years old, my parents' marriage fell apart. My dad ended up leaving my mom, and our world began in that trajectory where I would have to split my time with my mom and my dad, living with my mom as the primary caregiver and visiting my dad certain weeknights on every other week basis. And then every other weekend, my dad would come and take us for the entire weekend. We were always torn, my sister and I, emotionally wanting my mom to know that we loved her, and yet we were excited to see my dad. And there was one element that we were really excited about is my dad would always take us on Friday, and he would take us to a restaurant. That was a huge treat for us because my mom didn't have a whole lot of money, and I've told many stories over the years just about the times where God stepped in and provided because we didn't have a whole lot of money. And so going to a restaurant was like, it was a big deal. It was not part of our regular life. Pizza, like at my house, I don't know about you, but every Friday night at our house, we have pizza night. It's cheap pizza, but it's pizza night nevertheless. And we never had that growing up. And so when my dad would pick us up, it was really incredible that he'd take us to usually McDonald's or pizza. And my sister and I were so delighted. Well, this one particular night, he decided to ask us if we would be interested in going to a Chinese restaurant. To be quite honest, as I was writing this message this week, I was trying to reflect on any time prior to this moment that I had ever been in a Chinese restaurant, and a Chinese food restaurant. And I don't remember ever having been in one. I remember when I was a little kid living in Kitchener, I remember my parents ordering Chinese food during an Easter weekend. Somehow I remember that. I remember ordering it in a food court, but I don't ever remember going to a Chinese food restaurant. And so my dad asked us, and we thought this was an extraordinary treat. We arrived at the restaurant. You got a picture. It's myself, who's probably at this point 8 or 9 years old, my sister, who's about 5 or 6, and then my dad. And we sit in this Chinese food restaurant at this big table. It could probably sit 8 people, and the menus are passed out. And my dad says, "What do you want?" Well, we begin to look through the menu, and we really didn't know what to order. Like I had said, we'd never been there before. And I saw all these incredible dishes that sounded so incredible. So my dad asked again. I said, "Dad, it looks so good. I'm not sure what to order. I'd like to have everything." He said, "Well, would you like chicken balls?" "Oh, yeah, chicken balls is a must. What about chicken fried rice?" I was like, "Yeah, we want chicken fried rice." And then he kept on suggesting things, and he kept adding those things. And friends, this is no word of a lie. My dad ordered somewhere between 7 and 9 plates of food that night for 3 people, for a 5- to 6-year-old girl, myself, who was about 8 or 9 years old, and himself. And I remember as the server is coming, and my dad just keeps rifling off the things that he wants for the food, that the server's looking at us like we have serious problems. The table is completely full of all these dishes, and I mean, we had such a laugh. I said, "Dad, how are we ever going to eat this food?" And he says, "We're just going to do our best." And so we sampled a little bit from each plate, and you can imagine being such small kids, and my dad being there, who probably could eat a decent amount, we had so much left over, and we made all kinds of jokes. Well, now came the time for my dad to pay the bill, and he handed the man his credit card, and the man went to process it, came back, said, "Sir, I'm sorry, but your credit card's been declined." And so then my dad gave another credit card, and the same process happened, and that card had been declined. And my dad found that he didn't actually have any cards to pay for this meal. And so I got to tell you, as a kid, I had seen enough TV to know that our destiny was probably going to mean cleaning dishes in the back of this restaurant. And I thought that was for sure what was going to happen. And I started to think to myself, this is so ridiculous. We've got all this food, all these plates in front of us. And this is just so crazy that we would have this. It looks like such a waste. And so my dad went out to the car and was able to find a check that he had written out to somebody else, and was able to scratch the name out and sign it and give it to this man. And we were able to leave the restaurant without having to clean any dishes. As I reflect back to that story, it was one of the stories that's etched in my mind forever, especially because my dad didn't have the money for it. And I remember we made jokes, but in my mind, as an 8 or 9 year old kid, I thought to myself, my goodness, what a waste. What an incredible waste. I mean, my dad ordered way more food than he needed to order. He didn't even have the money to pay for this food, and what an incredible waste. We would have been fine with 2 or 3 dishes. He only needs to order a little amount, but he ordered extravagantly. What an incredible waste. What I didn't realize as a kid is what I perceived as a waste was a sign of extravagant love from my dad. You see, my dad knew that every time we had ever gone to a fast food place with my mom, that she had limited money and we had to order the Happy Meal or something pretty inexpensive. I had got quite used to ordering the cheapest thing on the menu. He knew that we didn't get to go beyond what we would normally want to, and he wanted to provide an experience that we would never normally get. He wanted to show us his extravagant love for us. So many times in life, though, we perceive extravagance as waste. We can look at the extravagant love someone shows somebody else and consider that as wasteful. We've been talking about the prodigal son. And the word prodigal doesn't mean to be lost, doesn't mean to be backslidden. It means to be wasteful. The prodigal in the story, the young son in the story, is called a prodigal in Scripture because he is wasteful for what he's been given. And when we read the story, we most often think that this young son is the wasteful one. He's the prodigal one. But I want to suggest to you that you need to consider one other character in the story as being prodigal. And this is going to probably make some a little offended that I'm about to say this, but I truly believe that this is the perception in the context of the story. This is what Jesus is trying to convey. And that character is none other than the father. I think that Jesus is trying to show that the father is a little bit prodigal himself, that he is wasteful, at least in the eyes of those who are watching, and at least in the eyes of those he's telling the story to. And I'll explain in just a second. Luke chapter 15, verses 20 to 32, as we end this series on the prodigal, says this. So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son and threw his arms around him and kissed him. The son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to him, Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. So they began to celebrate. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. And when he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of his servants and asked him what was going on. Well, your brother has come, he replied. And your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound. The older brother became angry and refused to go in. And so his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, Look! All these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave me a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when the son of yours who has squandered your property with prostitutes comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him? My son, the father said, you are always with me and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. Now we've read this story three times now over the last 5 weeks. And I want to give you just the context, just a reminder that's found at the very beginning of the chapter. Jesus is hanging out with people that the Pharisees don't consider worthy to be hanging out people. They're the ones that they would say, your mom warns you about those type of people. They're watching Jesus hanging out with people who are known sinners in the community. And they're standing back and they're thinking, if this Jesus is truly religious, he is wasting his time. He is wasting his efforts. He is wasting his schedule on people who don't deserve what Jesus is giving them. He's acting like a prodigal. That's the context. The Pharisees, in their minds, are thinking that Jesus is being prodigal. He's being wasteful. He's giving attention to people who don't deserve it. What appears as wasteful is actually a demonstration of God's extravagant love. And you see, God appears wasteful at times. And the first time I think that God appears wasteful, the Father appears wasteful, is when God goes beyond what is reciprocated. When God goes beyond what is reciprocated. Two times in this story, the father initiates relationship. It's so incredible. The first time is his younger son, the one that we call the prodigal. His younger son is coming home and he's rehearsing his speech to his dad because he's just blown all his inheritance. He's lived a wild life and he's now coming home to beg that his father will accept him as a servant. The Bible tells us that the father looks at the window, he sees his son coming, and he pulls up his gown and he begins to run towards his son. And friends, this is so incredible that the father initiates this relationship. You see, there's some incredible things here. First of all, he breaks cultural norms. Because in this society, when a son was coming to talk to the father didn't initiate relationship. He waited to be addressed. He waited for the son to come talk to him. Not this father. This father's a little bit wasteful. He's a little bit extravagant. He doesn't wait for the son to come and address him. He comes running to the son. What else we know is that restitution's supposed to happen first. That the younger son's supposed to make things right. He's supposed to pay back the inheritance. If he's truly going to be back in a relationship, there's got to be restitution. Oh, but the father doesn't care about that cultural value. He doesn't care about the order by which this happens. He starts running towards the son. History tells us in those days that a nobleman was known by the gait of his walk, would walk in a very proper way, and he would carry himself in a dignified way, somewhat like this. I don't know if it's like this, but in a dignified way, the gait of their walk. What does this man do? What does this father do? He pulls up his gown. And he begins to run in a humiliated way towards his son. He humbles himself. He puts away his nobility. He puts away his pride. And he begins to run from his son. The son had radically humiliated the father and was simply looking for a job. But the father shows wasteful reputation. He wastes his reputation. He expends his reputation. He throws away his pride, his nobility, the social values of the day because his son is there and he wants to show his son extravagant love. And he breaks all the cultural norms and runs to his son's relationship number one. The party's happening. They're celebrating the son's return. And there is a son who is supposed to be the reconciler. Being the older boy, he's supposed to bring the younger son and the father together, but he refuses to do so. And he's now standing outside of the party, just like the Pharisees are doing to Jesus as Jesus is spending time partying with the sinners. And they got their arms, he's got his arms crossed, and he's thinking, what a waste. What a waste of a calf. What a waste of a celebration on this young man. And the father, even though the son's supposed to do the reconciliation, he comes out to the older son. The whole city's at this party. We're going to talk about that in a few moments. And with the older son not being there, it would have brought great dishonor to the father. But the father still, even though he's not having proper expression returned to him, he runs to the older son. And here's this older son, he's got his arms crossed, and he's standing outside barely, and he's humiliating the father. But the father still shows him extravagant love. The father still humbles himself, humiliates himself. He still wastes his love on this older son, even though it's not going to be reciprocated. Two boys, two totally different stories, and a father who wastes his reputation, who wastes the societal norms, who wastes his noble appearance. He wastes it because he just loves his boys. Extravagant love. Both instances are extravagant love with no guarantee of love being returned. Friends, I want to say this to you today. God's love, God never limits the amount of love he gives out based on what he expects to get back. God never limits the amount of love he gives out based on what he expects to get back. Yet the father extends great love even though he doesn't know whether or not the younger son is going to return it. He goes to the older son and extends great love even though he doesn't know whether he's going to get it. And I want to tell you this today, and if you're watching online, you need to know this, is that God will always extend to you extravagant love, even if he knows he's not going to get it back from you. That's the reality, an extravagant, almost wasteful, almost prodigal type of love. Romans chapter 5, verse 7 to 8 says, "Very rarely will anyone die for a righteous person, though for a good person someone might possibly dare to die. But God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us." This is so profound. God initiates love while we were uninterested in reciprocating it back. Did you get that? God initiates extravagant love in the moments when we were uninterested in reciprocating it back. He had no guarantee that we'd ever respond. And God died on the cross for people who have yet to know him. He has extended extravagant love, even though he knows there's no guarantee of getting it back while we're still sinners. Last Sunday, I went to Starbucks, which is pretty much my Sunday morning routine to church. I get in my car, drive down Trim Road, and I have this routine where I park in the parking spot the closest to the exit that's not a handicapped spot. I park there because every Sunday and every Wednesday morning, I get the Compassion Center box for all the treats that Starbucks gives us. And this is a great partnership that we have. They everything that's left over at the end of the day, they put aside for us in a bin, and we bring it, and we're able to bless the individuals who come and receive food from the church. This is great, and give it to our volunteers. This is a great, great partnership with the Trim Road Starbucks. And so it's my routine. Sunday morning, I stop in. I order my coffee. I order a long blonde Americano or Cortado, something like that. I order one of two drinks, and then I pay for it. And as I'm waiting, I'll say, "Hey, can I pick up the bin for the Compassion Center?" And so I did that last week, and I paid with my app for a Americano, a Grande Americano, which, just in case you want to know, is about $3.62. And some of you are saying, "That's prodigal, that's a waste." But I ordered it nevertheless, the long blonde Americano, a little bit of milk and cinnamon. It's now being prepared, and I ask the lady for the bin. And so she goes and gets it and hands it to me, and I always go out to my car, put the bin in the car, and then come back in through the exit door and wait for my drink. And so I went out to the car, put the bin in the car, and I'm thinking about the fact that we've got this great partnership with this store. Close my passenger side door, go around to my car, to my driver's side, get in, sit down, close the door, start the car, and I'm about to pull out, and all of a sudden I realize something. I don't have my coffee. I'm so caught up with the bin of the food, I completely forgot my coffee, and all of a sudden I turned off my car, and I get out, and I'm waiting there, and no one can see you smiling, right? But because you got your mask on, but I'm smiling from ear to ear behind my mask, thinking, I almost missed my coffee. What a waste that would have been to have paid for my coffee and not to have received it. That would have been a waste to spend all that money, which is a lot of money, $3.62, to spend all that money and not get back what is supposed to come to me. And friends, it's a simple illustration of how we live our lives every single day. The norm is you pay for something and you get something back. You do something, you get something back. There is a reciprocating action for every action. You would never go into Walmart and go up to the cash register and just say, "Hey, I want to pay $100. For what? "No, I just want to pay $100. Like, well, what are you going to buy? "No, not nothing. I just want to pay $100. Just $100 for you." They would think you're insane. They'd take your money, I'm sure. But they expect that if you're going to pay $100, that they're going to give you something. And I want you to understand that we sometimes think of the Father as somebody who only gives us something if we give back. That there is always an expectation that if the price has been paid, that there has to be something received. But Jesus wanted the Pharisees to understand that God's love is so extravagant that he gives it out even if it's not reciprocated. That God gives his love to you even when you don't return it back to him. He is sometimes so wasteful, so prodigal, giving out what can't be reciprocated back. But his wastefulness that the Pharisees saw was simply a sign of his extravagant love towards humanity. Second thing that we see about God's wastefulness is God goes beyond what we deserve. He goes beyond what we deserve. The son returns to the unexpected returns to an unexpected response from the father. He's expecting his father to be inside, and he'd have to beg his father, and his father would be angry and tell him every mistake he made. But what he sees is his father, who's humiliated himself with the gown, running towards him, grabs the young son before he's even said anything, tears flowing down his eyes, picking up the son and dancing all around because his son's return. It's an unexpected response. And the young son, he can't understand it, and tears start to fill his eyes, I'm sure, as he's embraced by his father, showing this wasteful love towards the young son. And he pushes back from his father for a second, says, "Dad, I just need to explain something to you. I've sinned against you, and I've sinned against heaven." He knows he doesn't deserve anything more than to be a servant, and even that is a merciful act. He needs to be left outside the father's domain. But the father exceeds his expectation, going beyond what he deserves. And what does the father do? "Hey, servant, come here. Come here, servant Sammy. Go get the best robe in the house for my son." Incidentally, I don't know if you've thought about this, but the best robe in the house was none other than the father's robe himself. The father's robe's the best one in the house. And the father is instructing his servant to go get the father's robe to put on the son. To say to the son, "Here's my robe. It's a sign of my authority. You're being brought back in." Then he says, "Go get the ring. Go get the ring, servant Sammy, and let's put it on." And here's the son who's now wearing this robe, and I'm sure there's tears going down his face. He feels so embarrassed that his dad is lavishing this love on him. He doesn't deserve it, but the ring gets put on his hand. It's the signet ring of sonship. It restores his inheritance. This is one of the reasons why the older son's so upset, is it now brings the son back to a place where at the end of the father's life, the younger son still gets an inheritance. Oh, let's just pause there for a second. He's wasted his half, and the father's now guaranteeing him that he's going to get some inheritance in the future again. Isn't that wasteful? He doesn't deserve it, right? Because that is the wasteful, prodigal, extravagant love of a father. And then he says, "Go get the sandals, servant Sammy." And you need to understand that in this culture, the sandals were only worn by family members. They weren't worn by the servants. They weren't worn by the tradespeople. The sandal was worn by family. And so when those sandals were placed on the son's feet, it was the father saying, "You are my son." You see, he got more than he deserved. To the younger son, this was a waste. To the community, this was a waste. But to the father, it was a moment to show extravagant love. Our expectations with God are based upon what we think we deserve. When we do good things, we expect God to pour out good blessings on our life. How, you don't need to raise your hand, but just do it in a rhetorical way. Just in your mind, like, how many of you would actually think, when I'm doing good things from God, I'm hoping he will bless me. I expect to receive the blessings. If I do good, I get back the good, what I deserve. And the same question, same type of question. When you're messing up, when your relationship with God is so cold, when you fail God so many times, when you trip up and you break his heart, and you do the things that are against Jesus, you think to yourself, I probably will have God's blessings withheld from me because that's what I deserve. Listen to Romans chapter 6, verse 23. For the wages of sin is death. That's what we deserve. We deserve that. But the gift of God is eternal life through Jesus Christ our Lord. He gives us what we don't deserve and doesn't give us what we do deserve. Friends, you need to understand that our Father is an extravagant, wasteful, prodigal Father who gives us beyond what we deserve. In 1935 in New York City, there was a mayor by the name of Fiorello LaGuardia. He was a very strong-willed mayor. And one night, he took the bench and asked the judge to step aside so that he could rule on behalf of the judge. Here he was in the poorest ward in New York City. And the first case was a case against a little grandmother. This grandmother had been accused of stealing bread. And as she stood before the judge, she began to tell her story in a soft voice with tears in her eyes. And she began to explain about how her daughter had three children, and she had been left as a single mom. The husband had just taken off. The daughter was sick. The kids were starving. The grandmother didn't know what to do. And so she stole a loaf of bread to help her grandkids be fed. Well, the owner of the store from which the bread was stolen stood up, and he very strongly said, "Look, Your Honor, I understand there's great need, but this is happening all the time, and people like myself are bearing the brunt of this, and you need to set an example. You need to make sure she doesn't get off." And so Mayor LaGuardia sat there and thought for a moment, and he said to the lady, he said, "Listen, I need to tell you that you have broken the law. And that the price for breaking the law is either you pay me a fine of $10 or you spend 10 days in jail." The grandmother's eyes widened. And as her eyes widened, the mayor reached into his pocket and pulled out a $10 bill and put it into a hat. And he said these words. He said, your debt has been paid by me. But not only that, I am also going to charge every person in this courtroom 50 cents for causing this city to be such a city that a grandmother needs to steal to pay for her grandchildren." The newspaper the next morning read this: $47.50 was turned over to a bewildered old grandmother who had stolen bread to feed her starving grandchildren. Making forced donations were a red-faced storekeeper, 70 petty criminals, and a few New York policemen. Not only did the mayor pay her bill, he gave her $47.50 on top of it. Extravagant, beyond what she deserved. Friends, listen, Jesus wants the Pharisees to understand that God doesn't give us what we deserve. They're standing back and they're looking at Jesus hanging out with these sinners, and they think to themselves, those sinners don't deserve the love of God. They don't deserve to hang out with this holy man, this great teacher. And Jesus wants them to understand that the Father goes beyond what we deserve. He's sometimes wasteful with his love. He extends it beyond what we deserve. And we find this summarized in 1 John chapter 3, verse 1, where we read, "See what great love the Father has lavished on us, that we should be called the children of God." He has extended, wasted his love, calling us his children, just like the prodigal father's son, or father, the prodigal son's father did to him. Sometimes God can appear wasteful. Lastly, God can appear wasteful when God goes beyond the conceptual. Pastor Steve, why don't you come and get prepared? The son has been restored to the family, but would still feel like an outsider. Self-condemnation. I mean, his father has hugged him, embraced him, put things on him. But he's got to be walking around thinking, "But don't you understand? I slept with prostitutes. Don't you understand? I wasted all your money. Don't you understand? I broke your heart." He's in the house and he gets the concept. This concept that the father has called him a son again, he gets it. He's now legally, with the ring on his hand, the sandals on, the robe, he's now legally his son. But he doesn't feel like his son. It's one thing to be told that you're a child. It's another thing to feel like it. So what does the father do? The Bible tells us the father kills the fattened calf. This is so important. This is so good. You see, the fattened calf was only for a big event like a wedding. I mean, he doesn't just kill a calf and throw a little party. He kills the best animal on the property. This animal is only for the biggest of events like a wedding. This fattened calf would be so big that it would feed the entire community. And the father knows that. He's inviting the entire community to this party. The father invites the whole community to come and celebrate the restoration of the son. You see, the father doesn't leave the son with a concept of restoration, but wants him to experience the reality of the concept. For the concept to be real, it must be experienced. He doesn't want him just to walk around with this legal concept on his head, I'm my father's son. He doesn't want him just to hold on to an idea. He wants him to experience. And so what does the father do? He throws this grand party. Come and experience what it means to be my son. And the music starts to strike up. And he starts to hear the music. And now here's the son in the middle of this room where there's all these people from the community. And he hears the music and he thinks to himself, this is a party for me. I'm experiencing sonship. The father comes up to him and says, hey, have some wine. Drink the wine. And he's drinking the wine of his father, and he's experiencing sonship. The father says, come on, have a plate of food. I've killed the best cow. Experience sonship. And then his father grabs him by the arm, and you're not going to see me do it today, but he begins to dance around with the son. And everybody begins to dance, and the party's going. And here he is in the middle of this, not just with the concept that he's the son. He gets to experience what it means for the son. God invites us to more than a concept. He invites us to an experience. John 10:10 says, the thief comes to steal, kill, destroy, but I have come to give you life and life more abundantly. Friends, he didn't just call you to be a son. He didn't just call you to be a daughter. He called that you might experience the party. He called you that you might experience abundant life. He's called you to walk beyond the ideas. You see, sonship and daughtership is not just a theological idea. It's not just a concept. It's not just some legal status. It's us standing in the middle of the party experiencing the Father's blessings. It's us standing in the room and dancing and singing and drinking the wine and eating the food and experiencing it. It's about the abundance of life, the extravagance of the Father. Listen, friends, the Pharisees stood on the outside and they looked at Jesus hanging out with these sinners, and they claimed to be sons of God. And yet they missed out on the party experience. The older son stood outside listening to the music inside, listening to people eating and drinking and dancing and experiencing the Father's extravagant love. He stood on the outside with the concept of what it means to be a son. But it was only the younger son standing in the middle of the party who said, I get to experience more than a concept. And I want to tell you something today as Christians, whether you're watching online or in person, Christianity is more than a concept. Your sonship or your daughtership is more than a legal status. It's not just a document that God's given to you and says you're on your way to heaven. He's called you to the party. He called you to the music. He called you to the dance. He called you to the food. He called you to experience the abundance of life. He's called you to experience what it means to be his child. And I wonder if maybe as that son stood in the middle of the party, that this experience caused him to forget the experience he had just had. His condemnation, his guilt, his remorse, maybe all that he had been carrying and he had held on for so long, maybe the father invited him to the party so he would forget that experience and remember the experience of being a son. I want to tell you, we serve a prodigal God who to so many people seems so wasteful. But his wastefulness is simply his extravagant love for you and for me. And he goes beyond what is reciprocated. He goes beyond what is deserved. And he gives more than a concept. He invites us to the party. This week, it's time to live as children of God. A God who extravagant in his love. So God, I thank you. I thank you that Jesus revealed the Father to us when he told the story of a father pulling up his gown and running to his son who would not necessarily reciprocate the love, who didn't deserve the love. I thank you that this father threw a party so that he would know more than a concept. He would experience and create a new memory. Today, I pray for my friends, both in person and online. I'm asking God that you would allow them to be full of the Father's extravagant love. May they be overwhelmed that their Father loves them so much. And I pray this week they would live the life of the party, not a party that's set up by the standards of this world, but true life that comes from God, true life that comes from Jesus Christ. The atmosphere that would have been around that table that the Pharisees didn't like. I pray they would experience that with Jesus this week, and they would be reminded that they are sons and daughters of the Most High. Lord, bless them now, I pray, in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen.